industrial family that serves the nation presents the Theater Guild on the air. Our star, Helen Hayes. Our play, What Every Woman Knows by James M. Barrie. Produced on the air tonight by the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers. Every day, everywhere, you are served by products of steel. In your home, in your business, in your travel. The trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. And now, from the stage of Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C., to help open the Red Cross annual membership drive, United States Steel brings you Helen Hayes in What Every Woman Knows. In our distinguished audience, our Secretary of State, George C. Marshall, General of the Armies, Dwight D. Eisenhower, and Joseph C. Grew, former ambassador to Japan and 1947 Red Cross Fund chairman. Each of them has just spoken to our capacity audience of over 4,000 about the work of the Red Cross. Later on, during this program, Mr. Grew will speak to you. And now, here is Roger Pryor to tell you about tonight's play and the star, Miss Helen Hayes.
Good evening, everyone. In What Every Woman Knows, Sir James Matthew Barrie has mixed varied ingredients such as humor, love, and politics. And this play immediately calls to mind the name Helen Hayes, who stars for us tonight in one of her most famous roles, that of Maggie. Helen Hayes, a native of Washington, is the voice of the Red Cross in its current membership drive. And now we raise the curtain on the Theater Guild on the Air production of What Every Woman Knows, starring Helen Hayes and featuring Richard Waring. In the late evening, a young man hurries home through the dark street. We're in a town in Scotland, many years ago, about the year 1900. On the young man's face as he passes the gas lamp, you can see an angry frown. He's obviously very upset about something. As he arrives home, he opens the front gate and comes hurriedly up the walk. The house is small, but comfortable. The young man unlocks the door, looking anxious.
Father! Is that you, James?
Father, have you heard the news? Does Maggie know yet? Have you heard what's happened?
Do you mean about the minister?
Yes. He's announced his engagement to Miss Turnbull. It's in the paper.
I heard about it in town this evening. It'll be a fearful blow to your sister.
Does she know yet?
I'm not sure. I just got home myself.
Was that you, James?
Yes, it's I, Maggie.
Is Father home yet?
I'm home, Maggie, dear.
I'll be down in a minute.
Has she heard, do you think? Did you catch any note of tragedy in her voice?
It may well be there.
Ah, that man. I could wring his neck.
No, James. After all, he's a minister.
Well, you're both very late tonight.
Shh, not another word.
Why, it's almost 10 o'clock already.
Maggie, I was kept late at the public meeting. How are you feeling, Maggie, my sister?
How would I be feeling? Why are you acting so mysterious?
Mysterious?
Mysterious.
Who's acting mysterious?
Why were you shushing just now?
Why would I be shushing?
Oh, well, have it your own way. I'll get you both a hot drink to warm you on this cold night. I have it all ready for you. I'll be back in a minute.
Poor girl.
James, it's hard not to be able to give your sister what she had a heart set on.
That it is. I bought her some presents in town to ease her distress.
Mm.
Look, these packages.
I bought her some presents, too.
That man. Think of all the hospitality he's had in this house.
Many's the pound of steak he's eaten under this roof.
And all these books we bought. All to impress the minister.
And the shelves we had to buy to hold them.
17 feet of books.
And 17 feet of shelves. All to show the minister how educated we were.
Education. Tis the lack of that we fear more than anything, Father, Maggie and I.
I know, son. But when you were young, your mother and I were poor.
I know. She's coming back.
Don't say a word about the minister just yet.
No, Father.
This evening, better not even mention religion.
If you think best, Father.
And about the burglar, not a syllable about that for the present.
Oh, no, Father.
When she says it's bedtime, just pretend we're not sleeping.
James, here's your hot drink to ward off the chill.
Ah, thank you, Maggie.
Thank you, Maggie. That's noble, it is.
It's good.
How was the public meeting, James?
Oh, that young upstart, John Shan, would make a speech.
Is that the student, John Shan?
Aye, it's true. He's a student at Glasgow University in the winter months. But in the summer, he's just a railway conductor. And I think it's very bold of him to make a speech when he hasn't a penny to bless himself with.
Yeah, the Shans were always an impudent family. That's why we haven't been on speaking terms with them for years.
But hasn't he a right to make a speech as well as others?
As long as he recognizes that others know better. But he behaves as though he spoke by some heavenly call, like a minister.
James, you fool.
What did I do?
Yes, said minister. Oh.
And what if he did?
Maggie, I didn't mean a word of it, not a word.
Does this mean you've learned about that Miss Turnbull getting the minister?
All I can see is she made a very poor bargain.
Why, Father, he's a very nice gentleman. I'm sure I hope he's chosen wisely.
Not him.
I hope she has a lot of charm.
Charm? That's the very word I heard you use.
What's charm?
Charm?
Yes. What is it exactly, Maggie?
Oh, it's a sort of bloom on a woman. If you have it, you don't need anything else. And if you don't have it, it doesn't much matter what else you have. Some women, the few, have charm for all. And most have charm for one. And some have charm for none.
I have a sister that has charm.
No, James, you haven't.
Maggie, present for you. An umbrella. Here.
Why, James.
Here, Maggie, a present. A muff. Take it.
Father.
And here's a necklace. Take it, Maggie.
Oh, James.
And here's another. Silks for a fine gown, Maggie.
Oh, it's very kind of you both. But you might as well dress up a little brown hen.
Now, Maggie.
What would I do with all this? Let's be practical. Let's go to our bed. It's bedtime.
Well, strangely enough, I don't feel sleepy.
You don't, Father?
No, I don't, James.
Oh, what a coincidence. I'm not sleepy either.
Coincidence, you say?
Well, good night, Maggie. Father and I'll sit up a while, I think, and perhaps play a game or something.
Good idea. Good night, Maggie.
Both of you, I'm sleepy. When is as well known, 10 o'clock is our regular bedtime.
Yes, that is common knowledge, and that's just what we're counting on.
James, you fool.
Counting on? What do you mean?
There. Now she knows there's something up.
Does she? Hey, pay no attention to what I said, Maggie.
Now you'll have to tell me, James.
But Maggie,
James, go outside and watch.
Watch?
Take the walking cane, James, for protection.
Yes, Father. I'm going.
Father, what on earth?
Maggie, there are burglars about.
Burglars?
We didn't mean to tell you till we had nabbed them, but they've been in this room twice of late.
The silver plate?
It's all safe, as yet. So either they were frightened away these other times, or they're coming back to make a clean sweep.
How did he get to know about this?
On Tuesday, the policeman saw a man climbing out of this window at 2:10 in the morning.
Oh, did he chase him?
It was so dark, he lost sight of him. We examined the window and found that the catch had been slipped back with the blade of a knife.
Father...
The policeman said the man was carrying a bag.
The silver plate is gone.
No, no. We were thinking very likely he has bunches of keys in his bag.
Or weapons.
Well, we have some stout walking sticks ourselves. So if you'll go to bed now, Maggie...
Me? And the two of you in danger?
Oh, there's just one burglar.
The policeman saw just one.
I'd be very pleased if there were two of them.
And I would be very pleased if there were three of them. And I watch with you. Hand me that new umbrella.
Maggie, you're wonderful.
There. I have a weapon, too, now.
How could anyone see you have no charm?
Father. Father. He's there. I had no sooner gone out than I saw him sliding down the garden wall, close to the rhubarb.
What's he like?
Ugly customer. That's all I could see. He carries a bag in his hand.
That's him?
Oh, dear. What now?
He slunk into the rhododendrons. And he's there now, watching the window.
We'll trap him. Turn out the gas jet, Maggie.
Yes, Father.
It's a dark night.
Pitch dark. No moon.
Come on. Hide behind the sofa. Carefully. Don't stumble.
Do you think the man saw you out there, James?
I was too clever for him. I looked up at the stars and yawned as if I were tremendously sleepy. Then I came in.
Good. Get down now.
Move over, James, so I can squeeze in here.
Do you have to push, Maggie?
Quiet now and heads down. He's coming.
just light this lamp. That's better. Now, this chair, I think. Very comfortable.
Hands up, hands up!
Hands up!
Hey, you frighten me. Don't ever charge on a man shouting like that. It's not good for a person.
Why, it's John Shan.
And what do you think you're doing here with your feet on the desk, John Shan?
Read in the book.
You mean John Shan, the trainman?
Yes, service, miss.
I suppose I ought to say tickets, please. Except I see no occasion for humor.
I hope you were comfortable in our best chair, young man.
I have nae complaint to make against the chair.
So, our burglar was a native of the town.
Burglar?
That disgraced your family. I feel pity for the Shans this night.
I'll thank you, Mr. Wiley, not to pity my family. Well, is it a case for the police?
Perhaps we should let the young man explain, if there is anything to explain.
Explain away, Shan.
Only the uneducated would need an explanation. I'm a student. With prices so high, I'm desperate for want of books. You have all I want here. No use to you, but for display. Well, I came here to study. I come twice weekly.
Oh, what? By the window?
Do you think a Shand would so far lower himself as to enter your door? Well, the police, is it?
It is indeed.
Don't you think we might all go to our beds instead and let the young man study?
Are you a poor scholar, John Shand?
On the contrary, I'm a brilliant scholar. My first year at college, I lived on a barrel of potatoes. And we had just a sofa bed between two of us. When one lay down, the other had to get up. Do you think it was hardship? It was sublime. But this year, I can't afford it.
I must say, I like your spirit.
So now I'll have to stay on at work, collecting the tickets of the illiterate such as you.
Now, look here, young man. Be careful.
One moment, Father. Tell me, Shan, what's your professor's opinion of your future?
They think I'll go far in government or law or any field I choose. I mean to stand for Parliament when I finish my studies, and I'll make a success of it.
A few questions. Are you serious-minded?
I never laughed in my life.
Are you promised?
To a lady?
Aye.
I've never given one of them a single word of encouragement. There's too much to be done in the world.
Aha! Father, will you step into the hall with me a minute?
You want me to?
Oh, no, Maggie, no.
What is it, James?
This way, Father. Come with me.
I don't know what maggots have got in their heads, but sit down, young man, till they come back. Sit down, young man.
My name is Mr. Shand. Until I'm called that, I'll decline to sit down again in this house.
Then I'm thinking, young sir, you'll have a weary wait. It'll be a long time before either of them will call you Mr. Shand.
Mr. Shand, sit down, won't you? Pull up a chair.
Heavens.
You'll have a thimbleful of something to keep the cold out, Mr. Shand. The bottle, Maggie, and a glass.
James, what's come over you?
Do you drink, young man?
I'm practically a teetotaler.
Good. So are we. How do you take it, straight or with hot water?
If I take it at all, and I haven't made up my mind yet, I'll take it with hot water.
The kettle, Maggie.
Very well, I'll get it for you. Whatever you may be up to.
Now, Father, quick, before she comes back, tell him the plan.
Mr. Shand.
Yes?
We have an offer to make.
No patronage.
Strictly a business affair.
Let me tell him, Father. You see, Mr. Shand, it's this way.
Here's your hot water. I kept it ready for you, Father. I thought you might want a second drink on such a damp night.
Maggie, don't you see you're not wanted?
I do. I see it very well, James.
We have a proposition to put before Mr. Shand, and women are out of place in business transactions.
I'll sit here, shall I?
That's right. Women's rights. I'm all for them myself. It'll be one of my fixed principles in Parliament.
I'm glad to hear it, young man.
We'll have to let her bide, James.
Women. Very well. Sit there, then, and busy yourself with knitting or something.
Go ahead, James.
Mr. Shand, we're willing, Father and I, to lay out £300 on your education if...
If what?
On condition that 5 years from now, Maggie Wiley, if still unmarried, can claim to marry you, should she wish to.
What's that you're saying?
The thing to be perfectly open on her side, but you to be strictly tied down.
That's it. Decide, Mr. Shand.
I regret to say...
It doesn't matter what he regrets to say because I decide against it.
And I think it was very ill done of you, James, to make any such proposal.
No, Maggie.
I must say, Miss Maggie, I don't see what reasons you can have for being so set against it.
If you were to grow a beard, Mr. Shan, the reasons wouldn't be quite so obvious.
I'll never grow a beard.
Then you're done for at the start.
Maggie, we might at least discuss the matter and find out what...
Seeing that I've refused the young man.
Refused?
You can at least have his friendly opinion, Maggie.
It's a one-sided bargain. I admit I'm no catch at present. But a man of my abilities, with £300 to finish my education and start me in public life, where could I not soar? Far above her, I'm sure.
Oh, indeed.
The point is, without the 300, you can't soar.
Aye, you have me there.
Yes, but...
You see, you're safeguarded, Maggie. You don't need to take him, and he has to take you.
That's an unfair arrangement also.
I wouldn't dream of it without that condition.
Oh, then you are thinking of it.
Poof. Of course not.
It's a good arrangement for you, Mr. Shand. The chances are you'll never have to go on with it. For in all probability, she'll marry soon.
She's tremendous run after.
Aye.
Even if that's true, it's just keeping me in reserve in case she misses doing better.
That's the situation in a nutshell.
Another thing. Supposing I was to get fond of her.
'Tis very likely.
Or take it the other way. Supposing as I got to know her, I could not endure her.
You have both to take risks.
What you need, John Shand, is a clout on the head.
£300 is no great sum.
You can take it or leave it, Mr. Shand.
Well, what do you think, Miss Maggie?
I have no thoughts on the subject either way.
What's her age?
She's one of those women who are eternally young.
I can't take that for an answer.
She's 25.
I'm just 22.
I've read in a book that about 3 years between the ages is ideal.
Well, Mr. Shand?
I'm willing, if she's willing.
Maggie?
There can be no if about it. It must be an offer.
Or Shand give a Wiley such a chance to humiliate him? Never.
Then all is off.
Come, come, Mr. Shand. It's just a form.
Miss Maggie. Will you?
Is it an offer?
Aye.
Ah. Before I answer you, I want first to give you a chance of drawing back.
Maggie, you're playing with fire.
When they said I'd been run after, they were misleading you. No one has ever been after me.
Oh, ho.
But they will be yet.
It shows at least that you haven't been after them.
One thing more. James said I was 25. He's wrong. I'm 26.
Aha!
Now be practical. Do you withdraw from the bargain or do you not?
It's a bargain.
Then, so be it.
Did you say straight or with hot water, Mr. Shand?
I think I'll take it straight.
I will. We'll drink a toast to your career, Mr. Shand.
Very good.
Here's to you.
Here's to you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wiley, had we not better draw up a legal document first thing in the morning?
Should we, Father? Or just trust one another's honor?
Let Maggie decide.
Maggie?
I think we had better have a legal document.
We'll do it first thing in the morning, shall we?
Now, about the money.
I was thinking 5 yearly installments might be best.
Why not bank the whole sum in my name at once?
I think James' plan is best. Yearly installments.
Oh, of course, if paying it all in one sum would financially embarrass you.
It would not embarrass us.
Maggie, what do you say?
I agree with John.
Maggie, you don't mean it.
All at once is better.
Well,
so, all right then.
Then, has that settled? I think I'll be stepping.
If you'd like to sit on at your books.
Oh, as I can come at any time now, I think I'll go.
Have you a muffler, John?
I have.
You'd better put it twice round. Take care of yourself.
Yes, ma'am, that's right.
Good night to you, Mr. Shand.
And good luck.
Maggie, I think you might show Mr. Shand to the door.
Certainly. This way, John.
Yes, Miss Maggie.
Will you be in again soon, John, to work more at your studies? You must come whenever you...
She's softening, Maggie is. She's a changed woman already.
Aye, there's a bloom on her.
She's a remarkable woman. John Shand doesn't know what a clever woman he's getting.
I bet he shouldn't know. Men are nervous about remarkable women.
Women are queer. I wonder some writer hasn't noticed it and written a book about it.
A whole book could be written on that, James.
It was noble of her to tell him she was 26. But I thought she was 27.
You are listening to What Every Woman Knows, produced by the Theatre Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. Now we are privileged to hear from the distinguished chairman of the 1947 Red Cross Fund of the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, former ambassador to Japan, the Honorable Joseph C. Grew.
Less than 100 years ago, a symbol was born that was destined to brighten the whole field of human relationships. Since the Red Cross was first accepted as the emblem of international mercy, knowing no restrictions of race, color, creed, or national boundaries, it has appeared in nearly every civilized country on earth. Nowhere has it achieved greater radiance than in our own United States. Here it belongs directly to the people, supported by their freely given contributions, the greatest part of its work accomplished by the millions of volunteers who have enrolled under the Red Cross banner to serve those in need of friendliness and assistance. Those who serve and those who contribute all become shareholders in the great business of community welfare and in the cultivation of international brotherhood and understanding. Whatever differences of opinion may separate us, these principles for which the Red Cross stands are things on which we all agree. Is there one of us anywhere who would not save a life if he could, help a victim of disaster, give first aid to an injured man if he knew how? Is there a parent anywhere in the land who is not eager to see our youth given advice and experience in the responsibilities of good citizenship? Surely all of us wish to repay in some small measure the debt we owe our veterans by helping them to resume their rightful place in civilian life. The American Red Cross gives you the privilege of doing all these things as a participant in its great humanitarian work. Your little strength, joined to the strength of millions of others, makes you and the American Red Cross a tremendous force for good, a powerful influence in the lives of innumerable people of whose need and suffering you may never know. You and I recognize the importance of Red Cross welfare services to our Army and Navy. The testimony of our young servicemen shows how greatly Red Cross counsel, guidance, and recreational facilities are needed, sometimes in the loneliness of far-off places, and assistance to the families of those servicemen in emergency situations at home. This job is not done. It's a long-range continuing task. Our international responsibilities require that we maintain the greatest peacetime Army and Navy in our history. They require many of our servicemen to remain for an indefinite time at overseas stations where they need the Red Cross now as much as their older brothers needed it during the war. Nearly 75% of all Red Cross expenditures for the current year will go for service to the armed forces and services to veterans. This is an obligation of the American Red Cross under its congressional charter. Now we have commenced the annual effort to reach our allotted financial goal. Innumerable volunteer workers throughout the land stand ready to undertake their inspiring errands. Millions stand ready to give. Please do not fail us.
We pause now for station identification.
Your station is KECA, Los Angeles.
You are listening to the Theatre Guild on the Air, presented by the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of What Every Woman Knows, starring Helen Hayes as Maggie and featuring Richard Waring as John. 5 years have gone by since the signing of the marriage contract, and Maggie's big hour has come. But John Shan's hour has also come, for he, having finished his education and plunged into the world of politics, is running for Parliament. Today is election day, and the vote is being counted. John Shan versus Sir Geoffrey Tipps, Baronet. As the outcome hangs in the balance, the bands still play and the crowds are on the march. John Shan's election headquarters, the candidate is having a final conference with a young and beautiful member of his women's committee. She's Lady Sybil Tenterden, a visitor to Scotland from England, who's taking a great interest in the self-made candidate.
Oh, Mr. Shan, no matter what the outcome, you've waged a wonderful fight.
Thank you, Lady Sybil. I've come a long way, and I intend to keep going.
I know you will.
If I don't win this time, then next time I'll come to London yet.
That's what I wanted to speak to you about. Mother and I are going home soon. We live outside London. Our neighbor is the Prime Minister.
Oh.
Won't you come to see me if you're elected? I know I could help you a great deal.
No doubt you could, Lady Sybil.
Call me Sybil.
Oh, should I?
Why, yes, of course. Couldn't we go somewhere for a cup of tea and talk?
I have a speech being typed out for me in the office upstairs.
By your faithful Miss Maggie?
Yes, it's my acceptance speech. It's as well to have such things ready.
Oh, of course.
I'd better go and look it over. We'll hear the news soon.
But you will come to see me in London.
Lady Sybil, it's puzzled me why you, a girl of titled family, should have joined my women's committee. I'd have expected you to support the baronet.
Perhaps it's because I like self-made men. In you, I feel a strength that could bring all London to your feet.
You do, Sybil?
With a little help from me. Yes, I do, John.
And so, my constituents, the campaign speeches are over and... No. How can we make that better? How would John Shan say that? Ah, yes. Now, the speeches can be put away in mothballs and the work begins.
Well, how's the speech, Maggie?
Oh, just finished.
Did you type it all exactly right?
Yes, indeed. Just the way I knew you would want it.
You're very helpful, Maggie. You know so well how I like to express my thoughts that you're able to type them just right, even when I haven't had time to write it all out.
You have a very fine individual style, John.
Aye. The newspapers are beginning to write about my Shandisms, my quaint way of saying things with the homey touch.
Indeed they are, John.
Do we have some Shandisms in this speech, would you say, Maggie?
You have a few.
Good. Well, Maggie, you've worked hard.
When are you to announce that we're to be married, John?
It won't be long. The contract is past due and you've waited patiently. It's proper I should hurry things now after the election.
That's noble of you.
Not at all, Maggie. Besides, your brother and father are watching me like cats with a mouse.
It's a little I've done to help.
£300 and this work besides.
I'm getting 1,000% for it.
And very pleased I am you should think so, Maggie.
Is it terribly hard to you, John?
It's not hard at all. All I've seen of you these 5 years has increased my respect for you, Maggie.
Respect?
And a bargain's a bargain.
If it wasn't that you're so glorious to me, John, I would let you off.
In my opinion, Maggie, we'll be a very happy pair.
It's not as if there were any other woman that you fancied more, is there?
There's none whatever.
No. Oh, if there ever should be. If there ever should be some woman with charm.
You forget yourself, Maggie. There couldn't be another woman once I was a married man.
One has heard of such things.
Not in Scotsman, Maggie. Not in Scotsman.
Oh, but John, whatever you do so tremendously. And if you were to love, what a passion it would be.
Aye. There's something in that.
And when you're a success, John, the lasses will be there. Impudent beauties, perhaps, stretching themselves to attract you and crook in their fingers to you to run after them?
Oh, I can do without it, Maggie.
Can you look me in the face, John Shand, and deny that there's surging within you a mighty desire to be free, to begin the new life untrammeled?
Leave such maggots alone, Maggie.
Oh, it's a shame on me not to give you up.
I would consider you a very foolish woman if you did.
If I would, John Shand, I would no more want to take Maggie Wiley with me through the beautiful door that's opened wide for you than I'd want to take an old pair of shoes. Why don't you bang the door in my face, John?
A bargain's a bargain, Maggie.
Say one word about wanting to get out of it and I'll put the lawyers on you.
Have I hinted at such a thing?
The document holds you hard and fast.
Aye, it does.
John, you haven't had much of the fun that comes to most men.
No, I never was one for fun. I cannot call to mind Maggie ever having laughed in my life.
You've no sense of humor?
Not a spark.
No. If you had, you might be fonder of me. I think one needs a sense of humor to be fond of me.
We'll get on fine, Maggie.
James has the document, John. It's carefully locked away.
He would naturally take good care of it.
John, I make you a solemn promise that if you should ever fall in love with someone, I'll act differently from other wives.
There'll be no occasion, Maggie.
John, James doesn't have the document. He thinks he has, but I have it here in my purse. Look.
What? Well, do I mind the look of it, Maggie?
You don't ask why I've brought it.
Why should I?
I brought it because... because I thought I might have the womanliness and the courage to...
That shouting, what is it?
I think it means you've been elected, John. You've won! John, they're shouting!
Are you sure?
5 years I've waited for this night. But now I'm going back and grow old and dry up when I might have been married to John Shand.
But you will be, Maggie. You have my word.
Never. 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 Look, John, look. Look, I'm tearing it up. You're free of me.
Maggie!
Oh, I'm a fool. I'm a fool to let you go. For you need me, John Shand, more than you know. No one could have helped you in your career as I've helped you, and you'll regret the day.
One moment, please. Let me speak. Silence! Friends, you don't know what it means to me, this news you bring me of victory. But friends, I have news for you, too. I'm proud to announce that I've found a young lady willing to share my good fortune and to go to London with me. Gentlemen, Miss Maggie Wiley, the future Mrs. John Shand. No, being a lady, she cannot make a speech.
Yes, I can make a speech, and I will make a speech, and it's in two words, and they're these. My constituent.
Now, another year has gone by, and John and Maggie Shand are married and living in London. And needless to say, the romantic Lady Sybil is in London, too, and not forgotten.
Is my tie straight, Maggie?
Oh, yes.
Sure?
Oh, yes, it's fine. My, how polished and Londonish you've become this year. Are you ready to go in now?
In a moment. Would you brush my coat again a bit in the back?
Of course. Let me first fetch the brush. Your ladies' committee is all in there in the library waiting for you.
Shoes all right?
Oh, yes. John, do you remember all about today?
Well, I was just thinking. It's almost 1 year ago that we came here and took this house.
So it is. There you are, John.
My cuff's all right?
Oh, yes. Your committee will admire you, John. Lady Sybil Tenterton arrived just now.
That's good. Can't begin without our chairwoman.
Has she charm, John?
Oh, she's a very good committee woman. Very able.
John, this women's advisory committee of yours, does it have to meet so often?
Of course. I'm consulting them about the new women's rights law I intend to introduce into Parliament next month.
Oh, yes. That's the one giving women the right to grow beards.
There's nothing about beards in it, Maggie.
All right, John. How long will the meeting last?
Oh, not long.
I want to remind you that Father and Brother James are arriving from Scotland this morning. They'll be here before lunchtime.
Ah, yes. Good. It'll be very nice to see them again.
Good luck, John. Have you your papers?
Everything I need. Well...
Good luck, John.
Madam?
Yes?
There's a gentleman to see you. He really wanted to see the master, but I told him about the meeting with the ladies' committee, so I insisted on seeing you.
Oh?
Here's his card.
Mr. Charles Venables. The Prime Minister.
Oh, is he, Mum? He's very distinguished looking.
What? Show him in.
Yes, Mum.
Mr. Charles Venables.
This way, please, sir.
Thank you. Mrs. Chan.
How do you do, Mr. Venables?
I'm most delighted to meet you, Mrs. Chan.
I'm sorry my husband is in at that meeting.
It's perfectly all right. Doesn't matter a bit.
Shall I get him out?
No. I know your husband. And I was most anxious to make the acquaintance of Mrs. Chan.
Whatever for?
Many reasons.
But will you sit down?
Oh, thank you. Mrs. Chan, frankly, we're very interested in your husband, in a special way. I'd like to know more about him.
Then you should talk to him.
His influence has grown tremendously in his first year. He's made a few blunders in his impromptu speeches, but his prepared speeches are brilliant.
He has his own fine way of expressing his thoughts.
His shandisms are the talk of Parliament.
I'm glad.
From whom does he get his ideas?
Oh, can you imagine anyone giving John ideas?
No, when you put it that way, no. But those shandisms puzzle me. The other day, a member of Parliament had been making an optimistic oration, quoting some learned economic theories. The next day, your husband said in reply, "If my opponent were a cook, and his cake went up in flames before him, he'd read aloud from the cookbook to prove everything was under control." Now, where does he get that sort of thing?
Where would he get it?
Do you help him?
With his speeches?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I type them for him.
Is that all?
I put the paper clips on, too.
Jan, you Scotsman, slip out of an Englishman's hand like a trout.
Yes?
A special reason for my interest is a small cabinet post that may become vacant.
Oh.
We are thinking of your husband.
Oh, no. He'd no give up his legislation for any cabinet post, if that's what you're thinking of.
No, I know him too well for that. Mrs. Chan, there's a large meeting in Leeds next month at which two cabinet ministers will speak. At that same meeting, I want your husband to propose his new legislation. If the public reaction is good, we shall take him into the cabinet and sponsor his proposals.
Oh. And if the reaction is not good, you'll disown any connection and oppose his plans, huh?
Oh, of course. Do you like the idea?
It's John who will decide. Why don't you ask him?
No, because if he accepts, I would like you and him to come to my place in the country for, a week or two. There he can work on his speech until it's perfect. The Leeds meeting is so important, I want nothing to go wrong. You understand?
I'll tell him what you said.
Thank you. I'm charmed to have met you.
Goodbye. Goodbye, ladies. Thank you so much for your good advice. I don't know what I'd do without this fine committee. Goodbye. Sybil, come back in the library with me.
Yes, John.
At last we're alone.
Oh, John, hold me.
Oh, Sybil, I go to you as a coal man to a fire. You fill me like a peal of bells in an empty house.
Oh, darling.
Sybil, this can't go on. Seeing you for fleeting moments, arranging committee meetings just to have a word with you afterwards. We must declare our love.
Oh, John, I shouldn't let you. I shouldn't think of it even.
The one thing I cannot do, even for you, is to live an underhanded life.
But, John, the blow to Mrs. Shand.
At least she knows it wasn't love that brought her and me together.
I don't know what to say.
Oh, Sybil, we must declare ourselves now.
Oh, I love you so, but...
Look, Sybil. This I have bought to seal our love. It's a pendant.
A ruby. Oh, John, it's beautiful.
Look at the redness of it. That is a drop of my heart's blood, Sybil.
John?
What?
Is the door closed?
I don't know.
Is that door open?
I'm sure I closed it after the committee left.
I think someone was listening. Better put the ruby back in your pocket, John.
Perhaps it was the outside door.
This way, Father?
Yes, it must have
James?
Been.
James?
There's Maggie now.
This is the library here. Oh, hello. I'm glad you're still here, Lady Sybil. I want
John to... John Shand, how are you?
Hello, John.
Greetings, sir. Welcome, James.
Lady Sybil, may I present my father and my brother? Lady Sybil Tenterton. How do you do?
How do you do?
Entertaining a ladyship. Well done, Maggie.
You remember she helped John on his election committee back home, and now she's chairwoman of his advisory committee.
Well, good. Is your ladyship married?
Alas, no.
You will be yet, my lady, I'm sure. Fear bonnie. Oh,
thank you.
Well, Maggie, here's a present for you from the two of us, James and me.
Oh.
It's a lace shawl, Maggie. And if you knew the cost of it, you'd never dare to wear it.
Oh, Father. James, it's beautiful. Beautiful.
How lovely.
It's very fine.
Well, John Shand, it's not a day we'd be likely to forget, is it?
Forget?
The first wedding anniversary. Come, let's see what you gave her.
Yes, let's see it. What is it, Maggie?
Why,
Did he forget?
John forget? Would that be likely? Now, where is that present of his?
Where is what?
Your present, John. It's a pendant, Father.
Oh, one of those things on a chain.
That's right. A ruby pendant. Now, let's see. Didn't you put it back in your pocket, John?
Well, let's see.
That's it. See.
Oh, a thing of beauty.
A ruby. You were backward in speaking of it, Mr. Shand.
He thought you might blame him for his extravagance. He says it's a drop of his heart's blood.
And so it is.
A fine anniversary gift it is, John Shand.
Now, shall we tell them the truth, John?
I think we'd best.
Is there something you would like to say to all of us?
Yes. It was to Lady Sybil I gave the pendant and all my love with it.
What?
You ought to be fresh, John Shand.
No, Father, no. I don't think that would solve anything.
But, Maggie, how can you stand there?
Just a minute, James. John, I promised you, if you ever fell in love, I would behave differently from other wives, and I will.
That's very good of you, Maggie. What do you suggest?
I have a plan. While you were in at your meeting, the Prime Minister came to call on us, and...
Mr. Venables, why didn't you send for me?
Well, he asked me not to. John, next month, he wants you to speak at a meeting in Leeds for your new legislation.
What? At the Leeds meeting? I can't believe it.
Oh, John, how wonderful. What an opportunity.
So it is, Lady Sybil.
Now, Maggie, don't think this can make me draw back from my love for Sybil.
I never thought of such a thing.
Even risking a scandal, I will go on. I will.
Oh, I know, John. You're no man to draw back. But this is my thought. If the lead speech turns out the very best you've ever made and all goes well, then Mr. Venables won't dare to drop you later. Scandal or no scandal.
You're right, Maggie.
So, would you like to choose that time to make your announcement about you and Lady Sybil?
After the lead speech, you're right. What do you think, Sybil?
You're being very good, Mrs. Shand.
Am I? Lady Sybil, your country place is next door to the Prime Minister's, is it not?
Why, yes.
Hmm? How convenient for you. John, Mr. Venables wants you to stay at his home while you're working on your speech, and that means that Lady Sybil can be with you and help you on your speech.
Why, so you could, Sybil.
Yes, John.
John Shand, I could take you over my knee.
And so could I, and thrash you within an inch of your life.
James, Father, please, don't interfere.
And you too, Maggie. What a scandalous way to behave.
Father, please. One more thing, John. By the time the Leeds meeting is over, I'll be all packed up and ready to leave.
Now, Maggie, really?
It will probably be on the 16th, because the 15th is the day that the laundry gets back, and I couldn't very well leave before that.
Now, Maggie, you're making it all sound so sudden, and...
I assure you, John, it is sudden. And now, Father and James, I'll show you to your rooms. This way, please.
Yes, Maggie.
All right, Maggie.
Goodbye, Lady Sybil. I'll see you again.
Yes, Mrs. Shand.
You're being remarkable, Maggie.
Goodbye, John.
Goodbye, Maggie.
Come, Father, and James.
Maggie. Maggie, my lamb, how can you give up like this?
Give up?
This way, please.
But you are, Maggie. You're throwing him away.
You're pushing him into her arms, Maggie. How can you?
Throwing him away? Did you really think I would give up John Shand without a battle?
Maggie, now you sound more like yourself.
Now you're giving us hope.
Am I a Scotswoman or am I not? Would it be like me to let him ruin his career? Let Lady Sybil take the high road, and I'll take the low road, and we'll see who wins.
Listening to What Every Woman Knows, produced by the Theatre Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here speaking for United States Steel is George Hicks.
Good evening. Tonight you've heard Ambassador Grew's eloquent appeal for your support of this year's American Red Cross Fund Drive. I know you're going to respond. But speaking for the United States Steel Corporation and for myself, I'd like to add a couple of thoughts for you to consider when you're deciding how much you can afford to give. As a radio reporter before the war, I've seen how superbly the Red Cross functions in emergencies, in floods, fires, earthquakes, and in famine-stricken areas. Then as a radio correspondent, during the war, I had even greater opportunities to see at first hand the splendid job the Red Cross did for our servicemen all over the world and for their families here in the United States. Today, the demands on the Red Cross are far greater than ever before in time of peace. Men, women, and children all over the world need more help and need it more desperately. Your personal contribution is vitally important to the Red Cross. I urge you to give generously. And if you'll think twice about what your dollars will do when they're given to the Red Cross, you'll give twice as much.
You are listening to the Theatre Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation.
And now the curtain rises on the third act of What Every Woman Knows, starring Helen Hayes and featuring Richard Waring. That sound is a lawnmower. And the man pushing the lawnmower is the Prime Minister of Great Britain. Why does the Prime Minister of Great Britain push his own lawnmower? He does it because he feels it keeps his silhouette presentable for the electorate. And it does.
Phew.
Excuse me, sir.
Oh, yes, Barry?
Mrs. John Shand is here, sir.
Oh.
She says she's not expected, but she wants to wait and see Mr. Shand. What'll I do with her, sir?
Well, I'll talk to her. Where is she?
Right there in the conservatory, sir.
Now, Mrs. Shand.
Hello, Mr. Venable.
I'm so glad you've come after all. I'm sorry you couldn't have come in the first place.
Oh, you know how it is. I have my house to look after.
Of course. But now you have come. You're staying, I hope.
Oh, no. Just a surprise visit. I'm going to Scotland with my father and brother and, well, there are some things I had to bring John first. Some typing I'd done for him. Where is he?
He's visiting on the estate next door. He tells me Lady Sybil gives him very valuable advice.
Oh, yes. She's his favorite chairwoman.
I see. Now, if I were you, Mrs. Shand, I'd keep an eye on her. I'm not sure her motives are at the best.
Oh, I will then.
As for her political advice, it hasn't done his speech very much good.
Oh?
To be blunt, it's very disappointing.
Really? What's the trouble?
Well, he's been hard at work on it while he's been here, and a few days ago he read it to me. Now, it's a powerful, well-thought-out piece of work, but it has no special quality of his own. None of those famous touches of his. What do you suppose is wrong?
How should I know?
I don't dare go ahead with it this way.
Oh, Mr. Venable, surely John told you he was working on a new speech.
What's that? Is he?
Oh, yes. He wrote me that you were dissatisfied with his first speech, and so did another. He sent it to me to type, and I brought several copies here with me.
You have the speech here?
Oh, yes.
Well, I'd better read it at once.
Hadn't John better look it over first?
No, Mrs. Shand. I must know immediately. We're about to decide on the substitute speaker, and the decision must be made today.
Here it is, Mr. Venable.
Oh, thank you. I'll go in the next room and read it at once. I'll just take it into my study and look it through. Oh, I see your husband coming across the lawn now, Lady Sybil. Why don't you wait here for them?
I will. I'll sit right here.
I'll be back soon.
Would you like to take a walk through the woods, Sybil?
Mm. Oh, I'm a little tired of the woods.
Shall we go to the arbor at the end of the garden and sit a while?
Oh, that arbor. It gets a little boring, John.
Oh, well, we might as well go in then.
Mm, I think so.
I wish I could think of some way I could alter my speech so that... Maggie! You!
Mrs. Shand!
Yes, John, how do you do, Lady Sybil?
You never wrote that you were coming.
No, it's a surprise. I came partly to say goodbye. Father and James want to go back home for business reasons, and so I'm all packed, and I'm going along with them. I thought we might clear up all the details now.
Maggie, I wish you wouldn't be in such a hurry. It's all so businesslike.
Isn't that best? Besides, it's only a few days till the Leeds meeting.
The Leeds meeting. I'm afraid I'm dropped from that.
But Mr. Venables was so anxious to have you.
My speech doesn't find favor. There's something wrong with it.
I can't understand it, Mrs. Shand. He's worked so hard on it.
Couldn't you have helped him, Lady Sybil?
Oh, she slaved over it.
Oh.
But no use. Somehow my hand seems to have lost its cunning. I've lost the touch.
What a strange thing, John.
What's that?
Oh, it's Mr. Venables laughing over your speech.
Laughing? But he said it had no humor.
Maybe he's reconsidering it.
But how did he get it? I have the speech.
I brought up some neatly typed copies, and you left one of the drafts at home, John, and I thought you might like it typed.
But I brought a copy of that with me and read it to him, and he would have nothing to do with it.
He's still laughing.
How odd.
How very strange.
Maggie, did you...
Did I what?
Nothing.
Oh, well then. Goodbye, John.
Now, wait a minute, Maggie.
I can just catch the 5 o'clock train back to London.
Now, Maggie, please.
I think you'll find the house in good order, Lady Sybil. I'll leave you the keys to the linen and the silver plate.
Maggie.
Really, Mrs. Shand. The carpet on the upper landing is a bit frayed. But you can decide what to do about that later.
Maggie, please.
I just thought I'd mention it.
Stop it, please, Mrs. Shand.
And the ceiling in the dining room. Oh, I nearly forgot. It would be better for a little lick of paint. But again, that's your problem.
Stop it. Can't you stop her?
Maggie, please. All this jars on us.
Does it? But a promise not to stand in your way.
Well, you needn't be in such a hurry.
But do we have to discuss these things at all? Don't tell me you've changed your mind about wanting to take my place, Lady Sybil. Of course not. Have you, John?
Sybil, if you do come with me, I'll do all in a man's power to make you never regret it.
Then I can go ahead with my arrangements for Wednesday.
Oh, I suppose so, but...
No, you can't. I'm not going on with it. I'm sorry, John, but I can't face it. I can't go on. I can't.
Well, what's wrong? Doesn't John love you anymore?
No, it isn't that. I don't love him. Oh, I thought I didn't. I've tried to keep on, but I can't. He hasn't a grain of humor. Oh, it's so dull.
Are you sure that is the way you've come to think of me?
Oh, I'm sorry, John. Yes.
By heaven, it's more than I deserve.
You mean I may now congratulate you both on your good fortune.
Listen to him. More laughter.
Oh, John Shand. Let me be the first to shake your hand.
But, sir, I...
A brilliant speech. Just a few touches will make the difference. To rout the opposition. John Shand, you win. As far as I'm concerned, you're in the cabinet.
Oh, John, how good.
There's nothing or a thing to worry about now.
Mr. Venables, I've changed my mind. I would like to stay overnight if the invitation still holds.
Well, you've won a victory, Maggie. I see us both clearly for the first time.
What do you see, John?
A woman who has brought her husband low, Maggie.
Only that.
And the tragedy of a man who has found himself out. How can I ever live on like this?
Why not?
Knowing how blind I've been, it's not like a strong man. Am I a strong man?
Of course you are. And self-made.
I used to tell myself that.
But you are, John. You are.
I know better now. Oh, how can I ever live with you again, Maggie?
go, John? Or are you to keep me on? I'm willing to stay because I'm useful to you, if it can't be for a better reason. It's nothing unusual I've done, John. Every man who's high up loves to think he's done it all himself. And the wife smiles and lets it go at that. It's our only joke. Every woman knows that. Oh, John, if I could only make you laugh at me.
I can't laugh, Maggie.
Oh, dear. Watch me, John. Look. See how easy it is. Oh, dear. You know, John, Eve wasn't made out of Adam's rib, as is generally supposed. No, John, she was made out of his funny bone. Oh, that's it, John. That's it, John.
The curtain has fallen on the Theatre Guild on the Air production of What Every Woman Knows by James M. Barry, sponsored by the United States Steel Corporation, starring Helen Hayes as Maggie and featuring Richard Waring as John. Other members of our cast included Jack Merivale as James, Alfred Shirley as Mr. Wiley, Kathleen Cordell as Lady Sybil, Reginald Mason as Venables. And now before Helen Hayes says a personal word to you, here is Roger Pryor to tell you about next week's play.
Be with us next week, ladies and gentlemen, when the Theatre Guild on the Air presents Frederick March and Florence Eldridge in S.N. Behrman's witty comedy, No Time for Comedy, with Walter Abel and Francis Fuller. Frederick March and Florence Eldridge are currently starring on Broadway in the hit play Years Ago, and Frederick March has starred in the motion picture The Best Years of Our Lives. The following week, be sure to listen when the Theatre Guild on the Air presents Ingrid Bergman in Noel Coward's Still Life, upon which is based the current motion picture success, Brief Encounter. And here, once again, is Helen Hayes, our star and the voice of the Red Cross in its annual membership drive.
Thank you, Mr. Pryor. It's a very nice compliment to be called the voice of the Red Cross. But the real voice of the American Red Cross is that which comes from the lips and hearts of the many people who have been helped by our contributions to this cause. That's the most convincing voice of all. It's the best reason why we should make a special effort to give our American Red Cross the funds it needs to carry on its great work, and why we should give generously.
Thank you, Ms. Hayes. Remember, next week, No Time for Comedy by S.N. Behrman, starring Frederick March and Florence Eldridge. And remember, too, that the trademark of United States Steel, USS, on any steel product is your guide to quality steel. The Theatre Guild on the Air is under the supervision of Teresa Helburn and Lawrence Langner, with Homer Thicket, director, Carol Irwin, production executive, and Armina Marshall, executive director of the radio department. Music was composed and conducted by Harold Levy, and the play was adapted by Eric Barnall. Richard Waring appeared through the courtesy of the American Repertory Theater. Miss Helen Hayes appeared last on our program of Angel Street, which was originally produced on a legitimate stage by Shepard Trough. Your announcer, Norman Brokenshire. The United States Steel Corporation hopes that you'll be with us next Sunday at the same time.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
8 o'clock at...